At our drafting course for the State Bar of Texas, all we're asked to do is supply forms and forms and forms. And I thought, you know, one way to approach my presentation day would just be start at Form 1 and go through those appendices and tell you how I've used them in my practice. But that would not give me time to discuss the part I enjoy, which is the nature of the relationships that have led to this sort of planning. So I will point out from time to time where a particular form is by its letter and its page number, and you can look at those later. For example, in Appendix A, you have a full-blown cohabitation agreement that has every bit as much as you would have in a full-blown marital property agreement. Appendix B, on the other hand, on page 30, is a very short and simple cohabitation agreement. And those were intended to do what? To negate common law marriage. So they had two different important provisions. One is, we are not presently married, we intend not to be, and should that status be found to exist, that if there's any damages to one or the other of us as a result, the other party indemnifies. That's language that is on page 27 in the materials. And then as to address the biggest concern for people living in committed relationships without marriage is the whole question of how you define that relationship for purposes of legal property rights and fiduciary appointments. So it occurred to me early on that there was no way to define it except through a factual determination of whether or not the couple was living in what looked like a marriage for all practical purposes. And as I started down this path in the 70s and 80s, I simply said, by definition, and this appears on page 24, for example, that our relationship is established by 6 continuous months of living together, whether either party was absent for a period of time due to health care reasons or other wasn't to be counted. And in counseling people, we'd go through this, and we'd sometimes define different lengths of time and different things, but knowing that whether or not a committed relationship was going to be established was totally factual. This is where I think that alternative dispute resolution provisions were absolutely necessary, directing that if there were a dispute about that, that the interested parties would be required to go through mediation or arbitration. So that just gives you a sense of what those types of agreements were and what they became. Appendix D is a little different nonup. It was used for persons of the same gender who were in relationship together but really wanted to treat their affairs more like a partnership than a marriage, per se. So that's in the context of a partnership, and you'll find that on page 55. Well, once there was marriage recognition, after Obergefell, then the scope became much broader than it had been before, and I was kind of out of business in representing a lot of committed couples of the same gender, but I found that they needed me more than I thought, because this new relationship brought with it many different challenges. Stanley mentioned the old traditional family, and then we moved past that to the Brady Bunch. And what I'm going to talk about is so far beyond the Brady Bunch, you won't believe it. And it's going to talk about relationships that are traditional relatives, husbands, wives, children, parents, whether of opposite sex or same sex. And then we'll also talk about relationships where people are not related, like employee-employee relationships, are what I call unintentional co-owners. When my co-author and I first started talking about this, we got really honest with each other and talked about some of the weirdness that we had seen in our practices. And she described a situation where a husband and wife who had had a young child divorced because he was gay. Then his same-gender committed couple moved into the family relationship where they, three of them, parented the child. That's not the Brady Bunch. We don't have a popular TV sitcom to describe that one. And then in the other side of non-related individuals, I told her some stories about some of the work I had done for employer employees, particularly those people providing in-home care services to the elderly, which should not be a surprise to you, can sometimes get far beyond an employee-employee relationship. There is a wonderful, wonderful article that this dovetails with that was presented at an ACT Tech meeting last year by Hugh McGill, who is the Chief Financial Officer of Northern Trust. And he did just a tremendous job surveying the demographics and the generational differences between our grandparents to our children and all the way through that. That's referenced in your materials, but let me just say that his study showed that there are approximately 35% of U.S. households that are traditional, husband, wife, children. There are 31% that have no children and 34% that's everything else, including like the one I just described to you. And one of the overriding statistics in all this was that people from the age of 25 to 35 are not getting married.